manufacturing a little positive.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the morning open, and we're 21 minutes into the trading day. There's already some reaction from some of the events of the morning. The Commerce Department says U.S. orders for big ticket items, cars, machinery, fell by 0.8% in March, but that was far less than analysts thought would be the case. Word is from Ford today that losses topped $1.4 billion. But that's good news. It's also a lot less than expected. And with that, where's Wall Street? Dow is up about 0.5% at this hour, 51 points. NASDAQ up 0.5%. S&P 500 up about 0.75%. European shares up by more than 2.5%. And Asian markets closed mixed today. On the line with us live from St. Louis is Julie Nieman from Smith Moore & Company. Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Julie, we got word this morning that orders for durable goods merely slipped but didn't plummet, as had been the case. What does that tell us about the overall economy?
Well, economists have been forecasting the worst possible case scenario, and of course the market's rallying when it's not as bad as they've been anticipating. They're hoping here that the manufacturing plunge could be nearing an end, but bottom line is there's no recovery, even if we do hear the thud right at the bottom here.
So not a bottom just yet.
No, it's not. You know, what we saw today was a nice uptick in commercial and military aircraft, but big negatives in automotive, appliances, and probably the key thing is businesses are not expanding and updating, so you're seeing negative results in machinery and computers. That's where you have to see the uptick.
You saw automotive, of course, Ford reporting this morning that that there was a decline, a loss. Their shares are up 17% because that wasn't as bad as Wall Street had expected, right?
Well, and it looks like they may be the only one who doesn't declare bankruptcy. They're even anticipating that they could break even in 2011, whereas Chrysler, the big basket case, is preparing for bankruptcy, and it looks like General Motors will as well. In fact, Canada is even preparing debtor-in-possession financing to take care of the bankruptcy and usher them through it.
You know, Julie, we've got Treasury's Tim Geithner talking about bank stress tests today. How did financials react to all of that?
Well, the whole question is, how much are you really going to disclose? It looks like they're only going to be talking about the methodology. What we won't know is what anything but the gross numbers happen to be out there. The banks that are in trouble basically have to raise funds in the Fed if they tell them that it's necessary. I don't know that I'd really want to invest my remaining few coins into the losers, distress situations. So I think what you're going to see with the banks, a lot of shotgun marriages here.
All right. Julie Nieman, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Of course, we're talking about Wall Street today and the bank stress tests, and the Treasury Secretary Geithner is expected to lay out what went into those tests, and executives from the nation's largest banks will hear just how stressed they are. The latest from Mitchell Hartman.
The exams are confidential, and Treasury officials say no one will fail, but banks that get a low pass may have to explain how they'll boost their balance sheets. Paul Miller is managing director at FBR Capital Markets.
Anybody who is perceived to have to raise capital, the market will look at those companies saying those companies failed the stress test.
Miller says those banks will come under significant pressure to disclose more about their finances to offset investor fears. Bill Brown teaches law at Duke. He used to be a managing director at Morgan Stanley. He says Treasury isn't likely to force troubled banks to open their books entirely and expose themselves to the world.
The banks have tried to keep the kimono closed totally. And at this point, the government's focused on opening up just a little bit. But again, we're not going to see everything under the kimono.
Congress may have different ideas. Lawmakers may insist on full and frank disclosure from those banks that ask for more taxpayer money. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice, over 10,000 independent insurance agencies across America committed to treating customers as people, not policies, online at trustedchoice.com. And by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing, constantcontact.com.
Spring is here, and that means love is in the air. Time to fire up those house bands and pop the wedding bubbly. All part of the nuptial costs that average about 28 large right here in the United States. These days, though, many couples are scaling back, as Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Here comes 2009's More Frugal Bride and Groom. Lindsay Walschlager and her fiancé Justin Johnson had planned a reception at an art center in Red Wing, Minnesota. The cost? $3,000 even before the food. The more they thought about it...
Why should we mortgage our future on one day, given the uncertainty of everything?
Instead, they opted for something simpler.
And our favorite campground in the world is in Lake City, Minnesota, and it's right on the shores of Lake Pepin, and it's just gorgeous.
And the covered dining hall overlooking the lake is pretty cheap.
I talked to the campground, and I can rent that for $200, and it already has the tables, it already has chairs, it already has tablecloths.
Lindsay's parents are sharing the cost, but her mother works at a company that's seen several rounds of layoffs lately. That's making everyone more worried about money, and it's prompted Lindsay to downsize the wedding. Millie Martini-Bratton is editor of Brides magazine. She says the recession gives couples a perfect opportunity. They can focus on what they really want in a wedding, and that extends to the guest list.
Right now, it's a little easier to tell people, gee, I'd love to have you come, but I really am on a tight budget, because in reality, everybody is.
Bratton says businesses from venues to florists are ready to negotiate. Brandon Powers is a photographer in southern Georgia. Couples started haggling with him over his package deals earlier this year, so he introduced a la carte pricing.
And I haven't seen, you know, a big change in how much people are spending. They're not necessarily spending less. They just want to make sure that what they're spending their money on are the things that they absolutely want.
He says he's working a lot more do-it-yourself weddings.
Clients and friends and family members of the clients are taking on more of the responsibilities that were done by professionals in the past.
He's seeing fewer videographers, fewer bands, and more iPods. That's all fine with bride-to-be Lindsay Walschlager.
You know, at the end of the day, a wedding is about bringing two families together and celebrating it with the people that you're closest to, and it doesn't need to be more than that.
Even if her future in-laws are still getting used to the idea of a reception at a campsite. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Hope you can join us at our website, where you can find the Scratchpad, our online blogger, Scott Jagow, is there as well. Marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a nice weekend.
American Public Media.